Welcome to the Be Curious podcast, the podcast that champions solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I'm your host, Louise Halton, and in each episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the food we eat and the clothes we wear to overflowing landfills and ocean plastic. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas to allow us to lead a more sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. But the best part is, this podcast is not just about listening. It's about building a community and connecting like-minded individuals who are curious about alternatives that can enhance their lives and the longevity of the planet. And if you're curious already and you want to find out about many of the sustainable products or services gifted to us by the many guests we've had on the show, then why not head over to our Instagram for more information? You can find out how to enter at becurious_podcast. Today, we're getting curious about food scraps. We all have them, whether it's an apple core or a carrot peel. But today, we're discovering how those food scraps can be composted to actually create more food. And here to tell us how it all works is Monique Figueredo from Compostable LA. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit more to start with, Monique, how Compostable LA actually works.
Compostable LA is a community composting company, which means we provide alternative options to industrial waste systems. So if even industrial composting systems, we're really focusing on picking up food scraps from homes, maybe production studios, offices, maybe we're helping you compost right on site. So you don't have to rely on industrial systems. So you can keep those food scraps as close to the source of generation as possible. That means less trucking. That means that we're revitalizing soils right here in the city of LA, is building green jobs, supporting the economy, and all the beautiful things that come with a local food system that most people know of, you know, they're intrinsically connected to when they think of the farmer's market. I would say a community composter kind of does the same thing, but for the way food exits your life.
So before we dive into the details about what you're doing in your subscription-based company, I'd love to talk a little bit more about this issue of food waste on the landfill, because people don't think twice about it, right? You throw a banana peel in the trash and you just don't have a second thought about where it goes. But the impact of that ending up on the landfill is actually pretty extensive, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I think a lot of people are operating on the misconception that when you put a banana peel in the landfill, it'll just decompose. But the problem is the conditions of a landfill. Now, landfills are so tightly packed that once they are filled, they can actually be sealed, and sometimes there's going to be parks on there or housing developments. That means nothing's really degrading, right? Because otherwise the land would change. And the reason that nothing is changing or really decomposing in a landfill is because they are anaerobic, which means they are without oxygen. So there's not a lot of pore space for oxygen to exist. Whatever oxygen is in there gets used up quite quickly. And the only bacteria that are left in a landfill are bacteria that can survive without oxygen, anaerobic bacteria. Now, their byproduct is methane. So they very, very, very slowly eat food scraps. And I can't stress how slow this is. I mean, they have dug up carrots from a landfill 10 years after that landfill was sealed.
Wow.
And when they cut them open, they were still orange inside. This was called the Tucson Garbage Project. They did a lot of research on this. Newspapers perfectly preserved.
It's crazy because it wouldn't last 10 years in your fridge. It would go moldy.
Yeah. Right. Because the fridge is opening and closing, oxygen's getting introduced there, and different bacteria can survive in those conditions. So anaerobic bacteria are releasing methane. So that's one issue of a landfill. But that secondary one is that it's taking up this limited resource that is landfills. No one really wants to think of a landfill as a limited resource. But unless we want to live in a world like WALL-E, we don't want landfills everywhere. So this mix of the limited resource plus the methane generation makes organics in a landfill really problematic.
Let's talk a bit more about methane then, because it's one of the greenhouse gases that just doesn't get mentioned enough.
Oh, yeah. It does in my world.
I'm sure.
We're always talking about it. Yeah.
Go on, tell me about it.
Okay. So when we talk about wanting to really move the needle on climate change within by 2050, 50, right? That's the number a lot of people are throwing out. We really have to look at methane because in the first 20 years of its existence, methane is 82 times more potent than carbon dioxide. After that 20-year mark, it starts to drop and carbon dioxide plays that long game. But if we need to move this needle by 2050, then we really need to do a drastic decrease in our methane levels first.
Why is it not talked about more when it's 82%?
82 times, yeah, more potent than carbon dioxide.
Why do you think it is not talked about as much?
I honestly don't know because, again, I do live in a little bit of a bubble where it's talked about a lot. And so sometimes it's news to me. Like, I forget that methane's not talked about a lot. I'm like, oh, is it not? That is problematic. That is a little concerning that it's not. I don't know if it's because carbon dioxide does play that long game and it's also prolific in so many parts of industry, cars, factories are run, shipping, that's all carbon dioxide, whereas methane is definitely more localized to landfilling.
Agriculture.
Exactly. In my world, it's talked about a lot. And so I think that's actually a really interesting point about, like, who do you surround yourself with and what are they talking about?
And that's my next question, really, is like, how do we raise awareness of this lethal greenhouse gas?
Yeah, by being curious. Yeah.
There you go.
You invited me on a podcast. You gave me a platform to talk about it. I think that's one way to raise awareness. I'm also the person that will just show up at a friend's, you know, maybe we rented a cabin for the weekend. And I'm the one that shows up with a compost bin and was like, you can put all your food scraps in this bin this weekend. And that's how I started composting. It was as easy as someone saying, if you live here, this is what we do. You know, when I was looking for a roommate on Craigslist. And now that's how I introduce composting to people. It's just, this is the norm of my routine. And the people in my life happen to bump into it and experience it, realize how easy it is. So I think it's about giving people platforms. And I think it's about also being that voice within whatever community you exist in and showing people different ways of life.
And it being accessible, like you said, about being able to take a bin with you somewhere like that rather than thinking, oh, you know, we're on vacation for the weekend. Let's not worry about it.
Right. And it's like, no one brought a bin, so I guess we'll just throw it away. Sometimes, you know, reducing your paper or towel usage is as easy as cutting up a towel, you know, but it's that first step first. If you're going to reach for something, it has to be accessible.
And so what are governments doing to help combat this issue, would you say?
I think a lot of different governments are taking a lot of different approaches. And some international communities are really much more advanced on this. Japan does incredible work sorting everything. They have limited space. They have recognized landfills as a limited resource because they're an island nation. In California, we've passed the law SB 1383, which is a methane reduction bill. And its goal is to keep organics out of a landfill by mandating composting and food recovery. Edible food recovery is a really important aspect of that bill, too. And so some bills are mandating it. Some are incentivizing businesses to invest in composting infrastructure. Some entire countries have moved towards composting. So there's obviously going to be in the United States, states that don't mandate it. They don't even have recycling yet. And so that's a different conversation. But ones that have kind of embraced the fact of climate change are usually taking steps towards it.
You just mentioned edible food waste as well. Mm-hmm. And do you want to elaborate on that a little bit more? That's food that comes from the store that's like supposedly out of date, is it? That
sure.
Could actually be eaten?
There's all sorts of edible food recovery. Compostable helps compost weddings or production events, you know, and maybe they have a lot of leftover food that composting is actually not the best case use for that food. Feeding hungry people is the best case for use for that food. So edible food recovery is about taking food that is perfectly fine and edible and redistributing it either to humans in need or animals in need. There is a hierarchy you know, for the best management of organics. And at the top of it is just not buying as much. You know, maybe your Thanksgiving meal is a little less abundant, but still plenty abundant, you know, and then maybe, you know, like, let's be real. Yeah, it's going to be abundant, you know, or, you know, there is this vision of opulence at a lot of events that people want to see overflowing trays. And I feel like there has to be a little disconnect from that, that if everybody ate enough, we don't need to have the trays look like they're, you know, flowing over to convey opulence. So in the pyramid of best case use, I would say that buying less is up there, edible food recovery is up there, composting locally is up there, composting on an industrial level, and then we get down to landfilling.
Well, if we're talking about composting, then I know the government, you know, in California certainly are trying. They mm-hmm. give me a green bin, you know, to yeah. put my organics into. But that green bin goes all the way to Bakersfield, which is 100 miles away.
Sure.
And so there's all those carbon emissions used to get it there. It then has to be composted on that site and that location. And then goodness knows if it actually ends up coming back to LA. Right. Hopefully not.
But yeah, yeah, right. Great.
100 miles to come back. But your concept is, you know, local is so important. So why is that?
I'm a real community gal. Like, I really understand these 15-minute city ideas that a lot of people are moving towards, and I feel really compelled towards them because I want communities to be more self-reliant. And I want to combat NIMBYism, this not in my backyard idea where wealthier communities want to externalize their decisions. So they want to eat healthy produce and they want to compost that healthy produce, but they don't want that compost system in their neighborhood. No, thank you. You know, and I am like, one, that's not fair to that's creating environmental justice nightmares within the waste industry. Number two, compost is a resource. It shouldn't be treated as waste. It's precious because our soils need healing. And we've talked a lot about methane and landfills, but the other powerhouse of composting is healthy soils. So I want to keep that local. And yeah, I want to rely on less resources to truck something far away. There's also a greater level of transparency when you're buying or supporting a local service. There's that small business aspect. There's that, you know, you can call me and I'm like, oh my God, yeah, you want to come see a compost pile? Let's friggin' vibe, babe. You know? And so I think there's just a lot of sweetness that comes from localized services that we're missing. We feel so disconnected, right? We're on our phones. I'm doing this too, doom scrolling. I'm just further withdrawing into myself. And if I can just re-engage that sweetness for some people of interconnectedness, then I feel like I've done my job.
So tell me a bit more about how your service actually works.
So we have lots of different offerings. For the most basic one of residential pickup, it works that it's kind of like a CSA model, a community supported agriculture boxes. So we give you a bucket, you fill that bucket, you leave it on your doorstep, and once a week or once every other week, the compost fairy comes, exchanges the bucket, you get a nice clean new one, and we take that bucket away. And so all the resident has to do is sort. If they want to learn how to compost at home, we'll teach them that too. And that's the best, right? There's not even the little trucking we do is still trucking. So I would rather you grow food and compost in your backyard. But once we collect it, what we're doing is giving it to local community farms and growing spaces in the city of LA. So That Tiny Farm is a great one, Future Food Farms, Real Waste. They all do different things with this product, which
for
is
the consumer. It's actually, how did they just sign up? It's a subscription.
Sure, yeah, it's a membership. So all you got to do is subscribe and then that's it for you. You just sort and we take care of the rest.
Choose the day of the week that you want it picked up.
We do the day that we're in your neighborhood. So you get assigned a day that will be in your neighborhood, going around, compost ferrying.
And what about if you're in an apartment block?
Oh, even better. Yeah, we'll come up to your door. So sometimes, you know, we aim to have you leave it in a more public area that's easier for a driver to access. But if not, we'll just come up to your door and exchange it right from your apartment door.
Sounds good. Yeah. Easy, which is what you need,
that's the
right?
Goal. Yeah.
So You just mentioned healthy soil. How does having compost actually increase the health of the soil?
Oh, baby. Okay, so this is my favorite thing to talk about. Like, you just saw me, like, light up in a totally different way. So composting has two powerhouse umbrellas, landfill diversion and healthy soil creation. Compost is not soil. It's a soil amendment. So it heals sick soils. So the best description I ever received for this is that soil is geology, sand, silt, and clay, plus biology, the soil food web, bacteria, nematodes, fungi. Sick soil, the biology has died off, and we need to reintroduce a probiotic to get that biology back. That's what composting is. When healthy soil is functioning, it's like a 20-for-1 deal. I mean, it can retain 5 times its weight in water. It creates carbon sinks. It creates more nutrient-dense food, healthier plants. It just all that pore space means more effective rainfall. So healthy soil is my favorite part of composting. That's why I actually kind of started Compostable, is because whether it's being trucked away or being put in an anaerobic digester, which is another form of composting, I wanted the highest quality soil. And I know that the farm partners I'm partnering with are making really good stuff.
It's interesting that you say probiotics there, because when you say that kind of word, you think about, you know, your gut and the microbiomes in the gut. And it's the same thing, right? As you said, you know, if you've got healthy soil with good probiotics and microbiome, then that's going to transfer into the food that we eat, which is going to then transfer into the health of our own bodies.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about the food and health system?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. It wouldn't be a full compost conversation without that. So composting is the beginning and end of the food system, okay? It's what starts plants out on a healthy life, and it's where plants go when their life is over. In every natural system, you go into a forest floor and you see decomposition on the floor. Composting is simply mimicking that process.
You mean from an apple falling from an orchard or something right. like that, and it's rotting away?
Exactly. What it's doing is it's feeding the tree. Because it takes so much, you know, the reason you eat an apple is because it's full of nutrients. Where did those nutrients come from? They came from the soil. So if we break that cycle, if we don't allow the apple to fall back onto the ground, then that tree doesn't get those nutrients back. It gave nutrients to the apple. The apple was picked, taken away, and, you know, maybe leaf litter is now instead feeding the tree. But again, what happens if we're breaking up the leaves and taking the apples away? And so we've created systems that slice the natural cycle. And so composting helps reintroduce nutrients for those plants so they can continue to produce really nutrient food for us to consume.
Do you think this is why we have so many health problems in the U.S. especially?
Well, I think there's many reasons, but I think this is one reason, because a lot of people are eating, you know, carrots that they bought from a grocery store, and they're like, you know, if I'm eating a carrot, I want that to be a nutrient-dense carrot. Like, hello, I don't want to be eating a carrot. I want to be eating French fries. So if I'm eating a carrot, please be as nutrient-packed as possible. And they have done studies that show the difference between carrots grown in really healthy soil and carrots grown on conventional or even organic farms, and how they're 200 times less nutrient-dense. So it's critical. It is critical to human health.
I actually saw a study, too, about a pair of underwear being put into really healthy soil and being put into quote-unquote dead soil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the underwear that was actually in the nutrient-dense soil disintegrated. It was eaten by the microbiome, and the other one was just like an old pair of underwear still, like,
cute.
2 weeks later.
What a vibe.
Yeah. I don't know why they used underwear. But
I know, right? yeah, and that's the other cool thing. I always tell people, if you eat and if you wear clothes, you're connected to the soil, because the soil is what grows the clothes you wear if you're wearing cotton, and it's what grows the food you eat.
And do you think it's the same for plants as well? I just had this thought come to my mind about my front yard. There's a rose bush there from when I moved in, mm-hmm. and I've never been able to get it to bud. It's because when I moved in, it was completely overgrown and basically looked dead, but still had lots of, you know, stalks and things on it.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, the soil is very dry and dead out there, even though I've got like other things growing around it. I wonder if, too, you're saying that's why there hasn't been the fruits of the labor in the same way as like any apples. It's also like the buds, the rose buds have not come back.
Yeah. So I like to remind people that plants and soil like to be in relation with one another. You can't have a healthy plant or healthy soil without a symbiotic relationship. The plant feeds the soil microbes and the soil microbes feed the plant. And so anytime I'm walking and there's just bare ground, it almost breaks my heart. And anytime
you see so much of it in California,
you see a lot of it and people think they're doing the right thing because they're being water wise. But really, the water wise thing to do would be to plant natives, right? Because then the natives can feed, they got these deep tap roots, they can feed the soil. And California natives don't need as much nutrients as maybe non-native plants.
An English rose,
which is, I mean, a lot of the colonial practices, agricultural practices from England are what spread to California and actually caused a lot of the issues we see now. So that English rose is so funny. It actually represents a lot. It's like, I don't belong here, baby.
He was talking about me too.
I'll get out of here. You're giving back, you know, and that flower is trying to give back.
It's trying. Yeah. It's trying. So what do you do with the compost when you have it? Do people buy it? Or where does it go?
Oh, so it's really important to distribute the compost because it's a soil amendment. You don't want to just hoard it, right? You want to distribute it so it can be applied to the ground, heal plants that are struggling, and create carbon sinks. So what we do is we do member give backs twice a year. Some members don't want it, and that's fine. Then it just stays with the farm and they use it to grow food. But we really want our members to take it back and use it in their own yards to create carbon sinks all over the city of LA by using this compost. Outside of those two give backs, or if you're not a member, you can buy it for sure. And I would say if you don't live in LA, find a community composter who's making soil who you can go see and buy their compost. It's going to be such better quality than the compost that you can buy at the store. So it's like, it's all about shopping local. I'm telling you, there's just, it all comes back to that mentality.
Community.
Yeah, right. Because then there's that exchange, right? They get, you know, maybe you form a relationship and then all of a sudden you start bartering eggs for bread or whatever kind of, you know, I know this sounds like fantastical, but literally one of my friends barters eggs for water. They get their water refilled in a jug and they give them eggs from their chicken. And I'm like, this stuff happens all over the place. You just have to start it, you know?
Yeah. I love baking. Maybe I'll bake some bread for people.
Yeah, and trade it for compost.
Yeah. Cakes, actually.
Yeah.
Let's do cakes. Ooh. I know you're working with local initiatives like school to incentivize composting.
So I don't personally work with schools. I'm much more of an adult person and a dog person. I like recognize where my strengths are, okay? But there are so many organizations that do really work with schools. LA Compost is a nonprofit in LA, and they do a lot of education for youth. And so I think that's actually kind of another beautiful point of these small businesses. It's like you go where you excel, and if you are succeeding together, then they probably excel somewhere else and you can just refer people to one another. And so anytime a school is looking for education or there's a particular program they want instilled, I usually recommend them to them because that's where their skill set is. And they do. They have composting systems on many schools in LA.
So what are your top tips for composting then? I know a lot of people kind of don't like the idea of it because they don't want to put it on the countertop. Flies are going to get to it. It smells.
Sure.
So my tip, what I do with my composting is I keep it in the freezer.
Yeah. And that's a pro tip.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's good. A lot of people don't want to put it back in their fridge. And I'm like, it's not gross. It's just food you didn't want to eat. So it's not gross. It's not gnarly. And that prevents it from getting smelly or pests getting there. It stores it for longer. Some people use a little tabletop composter and then put it in a bigger bin at the end of the night. So they're not opening and closing that bigger bin. I love using sawdust. Make sure it's like real like wood, not MDF with glues or whatever.
What does the sawdust do?
The sawdust is like kitty litter, but for composting. Oh. It like absorbs the odor and absorbs the moisture. And so it really is so effective at if you just put a layer of sawdust on top of your food scraps and then keep putting it in and put another layer, no smell, no moisture, and a lot of little critters can't live in that. So a lot of our members can sign up for a sawdust plan, and we give them sawdust to help with that.
Oh, great.
Yeah. That's just storage tips. There's a million systems for composting. And so if you want to start composting at home, but you don't know where to start, there is... I can't tell you how many. So you can find one that works for your lifestyle quite easily. There's a version that's called trench composting that you dig a hole and you bury it and you compost it. But there's all sorts of vermicomposting, bokashi. But that is a little bit more involved, but totally accessible too. I don't want people... It's just not as easy as just put it in a bucket and let somebody else think about it. But it is... next level sweetness.
It's just always amazing to me, you know, how much food scraps, how quickly my little bag in the freezer fills up every week. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh, the edges of squash, oh, the tops of celery, oh, the banana peel, the apple peel. Like it's all, as you say, bits of the food that we don't want to eat for whatever reason. We've decided that those bits are not edible.
I mean, honestly, I just hosted a little get together with my friends and the food had been out all day and it's something that I didn't want to save. And I felt really bad getting rid of, but it feels less awful getting rid of like food like that at the end of a party, the cheese that's been sitting out all day, when you know it's going back into the soil.
So cheese can go into it. It's not just organic fruit and vegetables. What can
everything, if it grows, it goes. So everything can be composted. But it depends on the composter. So some community composters don't want to take meat and dairy. All of our members can compost meat, dairy. If you're composting in your backyard, you can do meat and dairy. But I call it the marathon of composting. Like, start with a 5K. You know, start with your banana peels, your apple cores, the really easy stuff. Get good at composting and then move up to meat and dairy if you're composting on your own. But yeah, absolutely.
That includes the bones?
Oh, yeah. It's also a little me and my friend joke. It's kind of metal to be a composter because we walk around her yard and she has spread compost all over it. And there's just bones kind of hanging out all over her yard. It's kind of like, oh, watch out, children. The compost witch will get you. You know, but you can compost bones. They will decompose. They just take longer. Yeah.
Okay. So what are the benefits of using compostable LA to using like the green bins?
It's good, better, best. That's how I personally see it. I'm not here to gatekeep any composting because composting is always better than landfilling. But I would say there is a hierarchy to these things, just like there's a hierarchy to buying food, clothing, furniture, right? You can think about composting the same way. Buying from IKEA, is it inherently bad? No. But is going, you know, finding a local furniture store or buying an antique probably better for the earth? Yes. You know, if you can compost in your backyard, that's the best thing. Heck yeah. If not, use a community composter who's keeping everything local. We say, you know, no food scrap goes further than 10 miles from where it was generated. It's all going to local farms. We know they're growing food with it. We know we can give some soil back. You can come see it. So there's a level of accountability and transparency there. And then, you know, if none of that feels accessible to you and the only way you're going to start composting is with a green bin, then use the green bin, you know? Just understand that there is exchanges for all of these systems, good and bad, you know? So the exchange for using a green bin is maybe environmental justice concerns, like, you know, where asking questions about where are these being cited.
I also find whenever I open one of those green bins that people have put plastic in there and all these kind of other things that shouldn't be in there.
Right.
So is that actually being composted is kind of what I end up thinking.
That's the cool thing about using a community composter. And I was saying this to my team right today, that if we flip open a bin from a member and we notice it's crazy contaminated, we throw that bin away. But every other bin is fine. So because they're not co-mingling in a truck, it's not like your neighbor's contamination is spreading to yours. So we can kind of earmark off any sources of contamination to protect the rest of the material because there's this high touch, because everything is in its own individual bin. And because we have so much communication with our members, the contamination tends to be quite low. So there's a lot of trust there. Like people know if I did my job in sorting and not contaminating, then I know it's going to be composted. And I trust it.
What kind of environmental impact have you seen with Compostable LA in the last 5 years?
So we've composted almost 1.1 million pounds of food scraps. And, from an industrial standpoint, is that a ton? No. But from a small business standpoint that's had quite a challenge, it's politically and regulation a challenging atmosphere to be a small business in California. It's just real talk. It's really hard. So the fact that we were able to accomplish that much with all the hurdles that we've had to jump, like literally is outstanding. It is mind blowing.
And congratulations.
Thank you. We recently worked the Grammys, and literally one bag of trash because we also rescued their plastic. We also did edible food recovery. We also did floral donations to nursing homes. One bag of trash at the Grammys after party.
Wow.
Wild.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So
you actually work with a lot with different events like that where you go in, you're on site, and you make sure that all of the cleanup is actually done really sustainably.
Exactly. Where everything on a production is wrapped in plastic wrap. The whole kitchen moves in wrapped in plastic wrap. And so we have a local partner. Again, we're not shipping this far away. That's turning that into flooring. The florals. We have a partner that can distribute that to nursing homes. Edible food recovery. We have a partner that's feeding homeless people right here in LA. So that level of interconnectedness is able to be done in a really meaningful and intentional way because we are a small company. And we can hold ourselves to a really high criteria, if you will.
How much are you seeing yourself work at events and things like that as a big part of your business nowadays?
Oh, man. So sustaining residential has been really challenging because of a couple of policies that de-incentivize people from choosing local options. And we can get into that if you want, or we can just leave that there. But events have become actually a big one for us to sustain jobs. And to be real, with the way inflation has been, it's really hard to pass costs onto everyday people also experiencing inflations. It is a little easier to pass true costs onto bigger corporations. And it feels a little bit more responsible to our community to be like, it is quite costly to do something so truly the way it's meant to be and the standard with which we hold ourselves. And we don't want to pass all that cost onto you, but who do we get to actually pay that? And so we do a little bit of Robin Hood, I'm not going to lie, where we're asking these bigger corporations if they can help sustain the true cost of this operation.
So what are your plans for the future?
I would love to see more inclusive policy to make community composting way easier, to see more compostables in the city of LA. I'd love to see that grow. So I'm just going to keep advocating to hopefully have a lot more of these kind of companies.
And where can people find out more about what you're doing, potentially sign up and subscribe?
Oh, please sign up and subscribe. Please. I'll send you a postcard. compostable.la.com is our website, and at compostable.la is Instagram.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Well, we will make sure that we put all of that in the show notes as well. And we will tag you on all of our Instagram too. Instagram is also where we have many of our giveaways. So if you want to go over there and check out what's being gifted to us from our many guests on the show, then please do so. The handle that you need is at becurious_podcast. I think that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much, Mo. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Ditto.
Yeah. I'm Louise Houghton. And until next time, guys, stay curious.